out at you.
Yeah, is there a censor button? Whoops.
Okay.
If you want to give public comment, we appreciate it.
Big crowd today.
Yeah. It's a home audience that we're. So, Noel, when you speak, you have to speak right into those mics.
Yeah.
Just. You're enthused.
I'm having a hard time to get second from anyone.
Tune everybody up.
Yeah.
Here, fill this out.
Okay. So, yeah, comment only during public comment periods, sir. Only comment during the public periods. Okay, so are we ready?
Just let me check here. I don't see that.
We can give Brian a second to get
up
here.
Okay.
What's that? It's going to be live. It's going to be broadcast live right now.
Oh, there you go. Something to aspire to.
All right. Are we ready?
Ready.
Linda, did you turn it on? Okay. So, call to order the October meeting of the Devil's Lake Water Improvement District. First agenda item is a consent agenda. Have any comments on the two consent agenda items? Yes. Okay. Any comments on the... So I'll make a motion to approve the financial report as part of the consent agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Public comment?
You want to go to his minutes now?
Just go to the
minutes. Yeah, go back. Yep.
So what's your change on the minutes?
Last month's minutes, I think there was an error in... under the Brian Green section on the sewer, on the LID, I think there was a gentleman asking about being included in it. I don't believe it was Bill Sexton. I believe it was John Force.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. So, I know Bill's property doesn't even come close to that area.
It was John.
Talking about John Force.
Force both months.
Yeah, and since it's, I don't know if that really needs to be. It's all.
So, any other comment on the minutes from last month? Okay. I'll move to approve the minutes from the September meeting with the changes to the Bill Sexton, to John Forrest, in the sewer section on page 3. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries. All right. Public comment. Please come up and state your name and address and speak directly into the mic, please.
Okay. Mitchell Moore, 2929 Northeast Loop. And I don't know if this really fits the agenda item, but first of all, you know, I just want to, you know, welcome you to your new digs. It's pretty cool. And I'm pretty excited about, kind of in the spirit of, you know, communication to the community and this and doing the cable access and all of that. But I got to thinking about it, and I think that all of this will really change, I guess, to some degree, or will need to change the nature of the water board meetings, because I just did the first violation back there, shouted out, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And if you think about it from a cable access perspective, that's not going to work too well with these voices coming out of the dark that nobody knows what it is. So I don't think your audience knows how to behave. We don't, let's face it. So what I was going to suggest is maybe, or ask, or whatever, the board maybe take as an agenda item for the near term, taking a look at, you know, the procedural process of your meetings. I love the way that it's, you know, been done. It's, and I think we've got it fairly respectful these days. But if there's a big issue coming up, you can only imagine if the meetings were like they were and people on cable are trying to figure out what's going on, it wouldn't work very well. And I think part of what might make that work is just the nature of the agenda. This agenda has sort of been fairly fixed, and it makes some sense, but when you're thinking of public meetings where the comment has to come kind of prior to the action and so forth, if you know, typically you guys will talk about a topic and action isn't taken in that meeting most of the time, minor issues, but for the most part, you know, it's not happening that night. It's happening maybe at the next meeting. And I know that because I read Paul's report, so I know what is actionable and not, but I don't think too many people actually do much more than read the agenda. So I think that there might be a way to structure the agenda so that, you know, the public comment, it's very clear what the actionable items are for that night, so people can kind of come forward. Maybe possibly to keep the nature of, you know, the discourse or the how we speak at these meetings. Maybe you want to open up public comment briefly for rebuttal. That's up to you guys. I don't want to suggest how you do it, but I'm sure that an adjustment of the way this is done will make the meetings kind of run a little bit better for this room and figure it out well, there's three of us in the room, and then when a big meeting happens, when something happens, you'll have a process in place, and it won't be mayhem. So that's it. But I really love this, what you guys decided to do, and getting it on cable. And thank you for that. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay. So let's move on to unfinished business, Devil's Lake Plan. Septic tank revitalization program, Seth?
On Wednesday, I had an opportunity to go to a meeting with the city manager and a number of the newer city councilors, as well as the councilor-elect. And it's basically just an opportunity for the city manager to update and inform those councilors on what has been going on the last year and a half with the septic tank inspection program. So we talked about like the inventory that was completed over a year ago, the analysis of that inventory, enforcement options, and we also talked about sewering and just other ways that we can assure that waste is not entering Devil's Lake untreated. So as we have found out over the past year and a half, this really is like a quite complex issue, and a number of the members who were at that meeting suggested having a workshop where some of the questions they had at that meeting that couldn't be answered could kind of be worked out, and an opportunity where all of city council, all the councilors could kind of talk together. So it's on their agenda next Monday for them to talk about septic systems and sewering. And I guess, you know, we'll find out more after that Monday meeting. There was a possibility they'll do a workshop. There's a possibility that we'll be invited to that workshop. But we're not really sure when that'll happen until the Monday meeting. So I guess just keep an eye on your emails, and I'll attend that meeting or watch it and let you guys know kind of what came out, what comes out of it.
What's the date of that meeting, Seth?
We don't know yet, and it's not even it's not an official meeting. It was something that was suggested by a couple of the council or the councilors that were in the meeting that we had on Wednesday.
Okay.
So again, like Monday, we'll find out the city council meeting. They'll have an opportunity to discuss it as an entire city council.
Okay. We'll keep an eye for that. Anybody else? Save our shorelines? Beth?
So there's a couple copies of the RFP that's sitting there. We also emailed that out last Friday. So I guess before we get into like the meat of that, into the timing and meeting with SHPO and things like that about the East Devils Lake project, as far as content goes in the RFP, is everybody okay with the content of that RFP, or are there changes that you guys would like to see?
I'm fine with the content.
Content's okay?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
So this has gotten a little bit more complicated than was originally planned. So I guess the number one thing that we're waiting on is we're going to be meeting with a representative of the State Historical and Preservation Office, also known as SHPO. Next Wednesday, Paul and I will be meeting with a representative from them, and then Katie R. Hanglesey, who works for State Parks. And in the staff report, I have that for Friday, but that meeting has changed to Wednesday. Devil's Lake is considered a culturally historic area, so for us to do any sort of excavating there, even digging in that site, we need to get approval from SHPO first before we can do that, which after the meeting that we have on Wednesday, I think we'll have a better idea of the parameters of what we're going to be allowed to do there, but I still don't expect like a full report. I don't know when to expect a full report, to be perfectly honest. I think like a 3P that I sent you guys a while ago, we kind of said, you know, if they allow us to do full excavation, we'll do something similar to the Regatta Grounds Rain Garden, where we'll create those depressions for stormwater infiltration, and then we'll do more of a shoreline part on the water and land area. If they decide that we can't do any excavating on the site, but we're allowed to do like some digging, then we'll just do a planting there. We won't do the stormwater we won't do stormwater infiltration. We'll just plant it, and if it comes down where they're not going to allow us to do anything, then we can still remove all the dead sod that's there and just seed that project. So for the RFP, I made the suggestion that as far as timing goes, I've asked that you allow Paul to approve that RFP so that in case we do get a report back from SHPO fairly quickly, we would still have time to plant it in this like fall season before the end of the year. I guess I'm still asking that you guys approve that. And if it doesn't, if SHPO basically said it doesn't get back to us in time, then this project is going to be pushed back, I believe, until next fall. And the reason being that we don't have available water at that site to plant the new plants that we put in. So if we did in spring, it would like become pretty difficult for us to water it over the summer, and potentially we'd lose a lot of money in plant material.
Well, you're proposing that we give Paul the authority to hire the contractor based on the lowest bid, right? Not just approve the RFP.
Right.
The RFP is done.
Yeah, we haven't put the RFP out yet, and we'll probably wait to put the RFP out until we get a report back from SHPO.
Okay.
If you are allowed to do the depressions and the more expensive method, how much of that parking lot are you going to be able to capture the rainwater?
To me, I would say probably 2/3. You know, it's kind of not really clear until it's raining where all the water's coming. But just from memory from last winter, it's about 2/3 of it that's cascading to the right side.
So
you
it's
know.
A lot.
So are you going to put any diversion in there for the water not to kind of skate away from the boat ramp? Is that what your thought is too?
As far as On the asphalt, no, because most of it will be hugging that shoreline already, and there's that little kind of boat turnaround spot where a lot of that water's going to. So we'll have curb cuts there. So most of it, you know, the vast majority of the surface area, it'll already be against that wall or that curb and work its way down. There is a bit more that, say, to the south of that in another parking lot will work its way towards the boat launch. We won't be capturing that just by the fact that unless we were to do something different, like add like a bead of asphalt across there. I think that the way the parking lot's set up, I mean, it would be a pretty simple thing to do, but it would probably be most favorable to send it to the left side of the boat dock or launch and to do a second one over there if we were to do that. And in fact, when you look at surface area, you'd probably want that extra infiltration area just if you were trying to pick up more water, because you don't want to overload these things by trying to do too much with too little space. So this one would take care of basically approximately two-thirds kind of the right-hand side of the parking lot going down, and then the water would infiltrate through that area where the sign is and that sort of area, and that on the right side where we've got our black plastic.
Okay, thanks. So I guess the only other question I would have, Seth, is that if SHPO's coming out on the 12th, do we provide enough time with the RFP coming back on the 20th to post it according to?
No, those dates are all going to be adjusted.
Okay.
Yeah, really, the big thing is, can we plant it before December 31st? And I imagine we'll give for the RFP at least 2 weeks.
Okay. Thank you. Well, so if we're bringing it in on the 20th and we're not planning on planting till November, do we really need to grant Paul authority over the, you know, for the 10 days that are going to be left? And
I think the reason I'm asking is that, because say then that SHPO comes back to us like November 8th, then we still haven't put that RFP out. So I mean, I guess if you'd prefer, we can come back to you again at the November 3rd meeting, and then I can make the same recommendation.
I'm just thinking, if we don't need to approve the RFP prior to, because they're not going to, let's say if we don't plan on breaking ground till after our next meeting on it, then you know, I would say issue the RFP and come back on the response. I wouldn't see that we'd have to, you know, unless we're planning on starting to dig before the end of the month. If that's the case, then it's different,
right? And
it's going to start getting cooler quicker, and you're going to probably want to take action as quickly as possible to get. If that's the plan, then I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah, that's the plan then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, any other discussion on it? Okay, so I guess I will make a motion to allow Paul to issue the RFP after we get a confirmation back from SHPO with what we're allowed to do, and potentially approve lowest bidder prior to our next meeting if the decision is we're going to break ground before our next meeting. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
And then I actually jumped halfway through my staff report. Just give a quick statement on the Wild Lakescape course that we held on September 17th. And this is the second one of those that we held. It's Wild Lakescape. We talked about native vegetation and the benefits that it gives to homeowners around Devil's Lake. We talked about the Save Our Shoreline program, where we're offering shoreline property owners the district will pay 75% of the cost of the plant materials and direct project costs to do shoreline native gardens and native plantings. So we, again, we had the first one we did, I think we had like 10 people there. The second one we did, we had 7 people there. And I think it's just a good thing for us to do on kind of a regular basis before the planting seasons. So it went well, and I suggest we do another one in spring. And I'll come back to you when we get closer to that and ask for approval to do so.
Okay. Questions for Seth? Vegetation management. Paul?
Okay, so we issued the RFP for grass carp consultant, sent it out to about 50 or so entities. That RFP is available online if people are listening to this and want a copy of it. We still have, there's still time for people to submit to that. The deadline is October 14th, 4 p.m. It's a Friday, and then I'll bring that back to you for November with potentially some interview opportunities, too, if we have some applicants that are able to do so. We do have that Tetra Tech presentation that at our November meeting, too, so we might not want to front-load it too much, but we can talk about that. But, yeah, so I sent it out to 50 or so entities, the whole Oregon Lake Association listserv, covering a big fraction of that. So just kind of in a wait-and-see period. We've already passed the question-and-answer period, which was September 30th. People were able to give an opportunity to email me directly and get a response to their email, which then would be provided to any other interested party. So we have a direct record of all communications relative to the RFP, too. So that has transpired and gone just now past. But, yeah, the submission deadline for the actual proposals is, again, October 14th, 4 p.m., via email, and that's coming to both myself and to the whole board.
We have a lot of questions? Or?
Well, we got inquiries from direct questions from only one entity. We had... you know, some other people interested. One person thought that they missed their opportunity to submit. I just said, no, this, you know, that you must have misread the date. He said, okay, great. And said that, you know, that they would look into it. So can't really tell you how many we're going to have, frankly. And, well, I have no real solid. And we're not going to get 50 responses. I can guarantee that. But hopefully we'll have, you know, 3 to 6. I mean, that would be, I think, pretty great if we got that many. For our erosion study, I think we had 4, and for that database, I think we had 3, and I may have those numbers inverted there, but, you know, it's a commitment for some of these entities to come to the coast, and so that kind of hampers us, I think, in some ways, but it's obviously a good opportunity, too, to come work on the coast, too, so a Portland firm, you know, may or may not bid on this. It's hard to know, you know.
Sewer, Brian.
Okay. Yeah, we're still proceeding along quite nicely. I have in hand a draft report from the engineer, which is a big step. And not the draft report, but the real report. He was kind enough to send me a draft and asked for comment. And it includes, the contents of the report are mandated by the ordinance, and this is basically what the city council will act on to approve or disapprove of the LID. It includes the proposed boundaries of the LID. It recommends the method of assessment. It has the pressure sewer design data in pretty good detail. It has the pavement design data, and it discusses a couple it lists all the properties that are part of the LID and what part they're going to be, if they're going to be, you know, pavement only or pavement and sewer or just sewer. It's quite detailed, and the good news is that his cost estimate is about 15% below what I estimated to everybody when I was trying to get him to sign the petition. So that's good news. I imagine I see a couple areas where the costs might increase, but I think we're going to come in about what I told folks to start with. And my big fear was that we would end up with cost estimates of 50% more than what I represented to people, and that would be a problem. But it doesn't look like it's happening that way. So so far so good. I had a few comments on his report. I understood that Stephanie Reed, the city engineer, was also going to comment before he did his final draft, and I haven't seen her comments, but I don't expect anything that's going to drastically change the report.
So when do you expect it finalizing?
He seems to be suggesting he'll have this done in a couple of weeks, and then it'll probably be up. I imagine it'll be up to Stephanie as to when it goes on the city council's agenda, and there'll be that hearing as to whether or not the it should be approved. Then it goes out to bid. Then the work gets done, and then, after all the costs are known and have been charged, then there's the assessment hearing about the method of assessment, and people are invited to come and comment on that. And then, but the assessment hearing isn't done until after the costs are actually in place. And, I mean, the sewer's in the road, the pavement's on the ground, and then the assessment hearing takes place. So, we're pretty far down the road if and when the city council approves the engineer's report and allows us to go forward. And hopefully that'll be on the agenda. I don't know. I would hope 30 days.
Right.
That's all I have.
Brian, I had a question. I know the engineer had some concerns about some of the ditching and culvert, looking at some of the road that's there. Was that not an issue? You worked through that okay? Does it really talk about that in detail?
Well, he's fine with the basic idea of maintaining the present drainage. That's actually, I think he agrees, more favorable than concrete storm sewers running alongside the road right into the lake.
Right.
That's really not what we want to do. But I think there's either, well, all I know of is one sort of rain garden kind of bioswale design feature at the bottom, where you come east out of the regatta grounds along Lake Drive, where that depression, that low spot, there's a lot of drainage there, and he's designed a kind of a little bioswale there as a kind of a drain feature before the water runs from there into the lake. So, I mean, that would be a drainage improvement over what we have right now.
Right. So I knew that.
Is that what you mean?
That one area, was quite a concern with the water running, coming down the inside of the road and then crossing over, because the road slants over. So I was kind of curious what he had designed for that.
Yeah.
So he must.
Is that what I'm addressing, that area you're talking
right
about?
Right. So he must culvert under the Voyage Avenue where it hooks on to get it back over to where, because there's a culvert past Voyage that goes to the lake. Somehow it's got to get to the lake. It's still on the wrong side of the road. That majority.
Well,
of the
he doesn't have design drawings with his report. So
it sounds like he's addressing it. If he's putting a bioswale in that area,
Yeah, I mean, the only place I see it, I know, I mean, he's talked about it, and he wants to do it, is in the table of costs. He has a cost allocated to that,
okay,
for that feature.
Well, good. Good here.
Anything else? Communications report.
Okay, so for the new viewing audience, I just wanted to first welcome them, but also point out to everyone that we have what is called a listserv through the district's website. People can sign up with their email and get directly into that inbox. One of three things, or all of three things, a weekly water quality update during the summer, these meeting minutes, agenda items, that sort of thing on a monthly basis, and also on a quarterly basis, a e-newsletter, which we actually just sent out this afternoon. So people that already signed up, which we have some 450, I think, or so emails after our big event that we collected in total now. So that fall edition of the e-newsletter, Clear Waters, has been issued. So people can look for that. The last of the water quality reports has been sent out as we've closed our water sampling for the season. And then something I didn't have in the staff report, but what was a last-minute addition, we were offered a free booth at the senior fair. It's an event that we've actually paid for booths many times in the past, just as an unmanned booth at the time was the goal, because we were going to be doing some sampling, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. So we set up a booth, and then as a result of the sampling falling through because of the weather becoming too nice, and we weren't able to do our storm season, Seth and I both kind of hosted that booth and talked to a number of individuals throughout the day, and just as an FYI on that. So that's what I have for you on the communication side. But definitely, if people are interested, sign up. Just go to dlwid.org, and you can click on the Join Our email there on the upper right-hand corner.
Thanks, Paul. Safety report?
No instances to report. It's been a good month.
erosion study.
Okay, so we've contracted with Tetra Tech to do an erosion study. All the field work was done this summer. The work is being concluded now. We expect to have a presentation on their findings November 3rd, 2011, which is our next regular scheduled meeting, which will again be here at City Hall, 6 p.m., third floor of City Hall in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Lincoln City. And so we look forward to that. That's really all I have to report. I did get a 2-terabyte disk drive in the mail as a result of some of the information that they were sharing with us. So there's a lot of data. Unfortunately, there was some formatting issues with that disk drive, so I had to ship it back to them this afternoon. So I didn't even get to look at that because it wouldn't come up. But we'll get all those things resolved, and their November 3rd presentation, I think, will be well received, and you'll have the report sometime. I tried to get a date on that, trying to get at least 2 weeks ahead of time. It's going to be close. I know that Bob Mussender, I think his last name was, from Tetra Tech out of Fort Collins, Colorado, who participated in the field work, is out until mid-October. So whatever work he has yet to do and to finish that report on as his part, you know, they weren't able to confirm a specific time to release that report. But at a minimum, I would think at least a week, and we can get that up online and get that out to everyone to have a look at it ahead of our meeting on November 3rd.
So, bacterial source sampling?
Okay, so district approved moving forward on a DNA bacterial source tracking study, continuation from last year where we looked at Thompson Creek as and trying to disseminate the sources and types of sources of not E. coli, but of a bacteria that are in the system that are represented by E. coli in a lot of ways. Was able to get the lab set up. We did get a new lab to do the analysis. We actually went ahead and did our first sampling. We thought we were going to sample on as early as Monday. We thought then Tuesday, and then it finally rained on what? Wednesday? Yes, Wednesday, yesterday. So we went out, grabbed our samples. It's kind of a convoluted process. We got to take our regular E. coli, grab samples, take those to the lab in Neskowin and come back to our lab and do the sample prep for the DNA analysis, which is basically just filtering the samples in a very, antiseptic fashion. And we got into our third sample of filtering it, and the vacuum pump that we bought last year to begin this process died. Very tragically. It wouldn't reset, nothing. I mean, it's just broken. And it does have a 2-year warranty, but that didn't do us any good yesterday. So I'm going to ship that out tomorrow, and hopefully we'll get something back in the near term. The goal is to do a storm sampling event, an early storm sampling event, not wait until February when we know it'll be raining again, but to capture that kind of early kind of flushing, that first kind of flush. So there is a potential that we could still get some stuff in time. I mean, last October was pretty dry, in November really was when it really picked up. But we had a good window yesterday to look at least the first initial. The goal is to do 3 full days. So we will need to, if we submit all of those samples to the lab, as I assume is our intent, we may need to transfer some money into that fund. We budgeted about $5,000 to do this study, just kind of a ballpark. So we have that available. There's other money in monitoring that can be directly used without a resolution transfer, But if we go over our monitoring budget, then we'd want to move some money. But we don't have to do that at this meeting. As soon as we send them off and, are billing or accepting, that we're going to be doing it, then we need to make sure that those dollars are in place. But we can do that in February or November, or even December, depending on when we ship those out. So that's the news on that.
So at some point, you'll either have to make a call as to whether we abandon this because we don't have the vacuum pump, mm-hmm. and we've had too many storm events to get that wash off the landscape.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good assessment of that. If we sample in say mid-February, we're looking at a different thing, which may or may not be bad, but it's not what our goal was. It's changed the information that we're seeking to gather. The first flush is a real important kind of time. Early, right after the summer, everything that's been happening on the landscape's been happening on the landscape. Whether it's cattle grazing or whatever it is, those types of activities, birds, ducks, people, dogs. And so that first rain event, not the very first one, unless it's a really heavy deluge, but the early ones will, once the ground's kind of saturated and the water's moving through the soil, the very top level of soil, that's when stuff will start migrating to a stream. And it's a good opportunity to grab some information. So,
well, haven't we already had that event?
We had an early one. We've had one. If it stays dry and it's dry for another month, then you effectively have an opportunity for another first flush. Until it's like raining and raining and raining, that's when you've really kind of missed the window. If it stays dry and we can get the lab support for the E. coli as well as the vacuum pump in place, we'll shoot to do it again. And then just at anything, what we're out is just some E. coli sample data that, you know, costs us. You know, unless we ship the stuff to the lab in Seattle, you know, we're not obviously going to get billed for that. You know, it's a waste of our time, though, too. Obviously, we don't want to be trying to prep samples that don't get utilized, too. So just the, you know, bad luck there. 2-year warranty and lasted 13 months or something. So
at least it was under warranty.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. So the audit.
Yeah. So we sent out letters to 16 qualified firms in our kind of surface area. I chose all the coastal firms from Astoria to Brookings. Figured that was an important group. As well as McMinnville, Albany, and Corvallis. We received only one response out of those 16 requests. That copy has been sent to you all. You should have it. There's a quick summary as the overall cost provided there in the staff report. This bid came from Grimstad and Associates, who have done our audits almost exclusively, as best I can tell. Very familiar with the Devil's Lake Water Improvement District, and have been in business on the coast since 81. So they did our audit last year at a cost of $3,300. The previous year, under contract, they did it for $3,200 and $3,100 in the year, 2 years prior. The audit bids that we received from them for the first year were $6,000, $6,100 for the second year, and $6,200 for a third year. We did ask in our RFP to evaluate the cost of doing a review, which is a less arduous process. And you see there the bids for those 3 years, single years, $3,600, $3,800 for a second year, and $4,000 for the third year of a review. Obviously, this is a substantial increase from last time. $3,300 to basically $6,000 is what the you know, their bid, the difference, you know, some $2,700.
So, Paul, did you contact any of the 11 people that didn't bother to bid and find out why not?
No, I didn't. Not at this juncture. I did hear from one individual who volunteered that information. They just you know, staffing issues and some medical leave that was going to happen for them. But you know, that's honestly, I don't know why the lack of interest. You know, there's really no indication.
How much work is required to respond to an RFP?
You know, it can be substantial. You know, obviously these people are used to having to respond to them, but it's a gamble. You know, you're going to use some staff time, and you're going to fill out these forms. You know, or to meet the RFP. You know, I would have a hard time guessing, not knowing, you know, not being a respondent myself. But I would say a substantial amount of effort. You know, we spend a good couple of weeks building them, and I'm sure it takes a couple of weeks to kind of to look at it and you know, maybe not to fill it out, you know, the physical typing it up, but to know, okay, do you want to respond to it, and that kind of process that they would go through. You know, I'm sure it's, you know, sizable. You know, and then, you know, it's a risk. You know, you're either going to get the bid or you're not. You know, it's going to be based on trying to beat out competitors. And you know, there's just another issue, too. Like, if people are, again, we mentioned this before, you know, if there's a cost of doing business on the coast that, say, a Portland company may not just be even interested, you know. And that's why we limited it to fairly local. I think Corvallis, Albany, McMinnville, of course, Lincoln City, Newport. But my recommendation is to go ahead and award the review to Grimstad and Associates for 1 year, and then to resubmit this to a larger pool of potential auditors, reviewers, for the subsequent years, or for basically for another 1 year with an option of 3 year contract.
How far out is this, Paul? I mean, from the time that they send you the their interest back before they actually do the audit. Do they do the audit in June?
Actually, it's due by December 31st. So there is a time frame that, you know, we have to have our audit completed or our review completed by the end of the calendar year. So, you know, that can be an issue with scheduling, you know, for someone to say, well, yeah, we don't really have time to take on a new client. You know, I mean, that's a fair thing for an accountant to really know, like, well, do they really have the time and staff to make that bid, you know? And if it's questionable whether they do or not, they may just not bid again, too. So, you know, we do need to, you know, act on this. That's
so is part of it just poor timing on our part?
Well, you know, a little bit maybe. I mean, we've you know, we could have pushed this back a couple more months. Obviously, we could have, like, yeah, said submitted this, say, in August, you know, or what have you. But you know, we still have 3 months, really, effectively from today, to get this completed. So, you know, if, you know, next for this one, and that's kind of what I'm thinking, if we were to resubmit this, well, then basically there's like almost 15 months of time for people to, you know, to know, well, I'm going to have time to do this or I'm not going to have time to do this, as far as...
I'm assuming these dates, I must be missing something here, these dates are for the end of the fiscal year for which the audit is being done. Is that not... June 30th, 2012, isn't that?
Yeah, I think that may be an error on their... This I copied and pasted this directly from their thing, but this the audit is through our financial records of June 30th, 2011. Correct.
That right. Has to be done by December 31st of 2011.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean. The years are wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
We did get a, you know, like I was saying, we've contracted with Signe and Grimstad and Associates for a number of years, and at the end of our last contract, they did offer a kind of a time and materials audit. Without a, you know, a price, you know, and, you know, would have assumed it would have been around the same price as it was last year. We, of course, selected to go and get a full RFP and do this process to look at, you know, a real dollar figure, you know, so we know we've got a dollar figure there. And the dollar figure that's come back from their proposal is, you know, $6,000. If we go down to the review, which... As a special district of our size, we could do, you know, their price is $3,600.
So have our audit requirements changed that much? Or just,
you know, from the, they change all the time, they've always told us that they do change all the time. And when I looked at their proposal, you know, there were a couple things on the list of requests from us that were totally new to me, too. So I'm like, oh, I guess we'll be looking at doing something additional. So that's some evidence to me that, yeah, the audit requirements have changed. You know, that's something that the auditors are up on. You know, it's not something that we follow. You know, we're not board accountants, certified board accountants, even to understand all that language for that respect. But, yeah, so there are some new requirements. If their audit proposal is any indication of that, absolutely.
Did Grimstad and Associates give you any reason why they doubled their price?
No, the only thing that in the proposal that said, you know, that based on the timeline that they would have to have this do this in December. And, okay, so that kind of makes me kind of think that there's an indication that, you know, maybe it's a time crunch and you know, that the price maybe is accordingly. But then the subsequent years, you would think, would be a lot less. You know, if you're not under a time crunch to do the following year, then, you know, your price would assumingly be less. But it's not. So I don't really think that that's... you know, evidence that it is a time crunch that's really causing this cost to be higher than it was last year. Because otherwise, you know, if you wanted a competitive bid, I think you would add a much lower price for a second year. But, you know, that's speculative. I don't know that, obviously.
Well, I mean, I don't think we can throw this, you know, withhold a decision and throw this out again to the other auditors, because then we don't make a decision until the November meeting, and then the deadline is December 31st. And that doesn't seem like enough time. I'd like to see us try a review for once. And you know, we're financially pretty small. Our finances are pretty simple, and an advantage of using Grimstad is they're familiar with our finances, and I think we're going to, you know, they're going to be licking the same red flags whether we call it an audit or a review. That and, I mean, they're going to call it, they're looking for the same red flags in either case. So I would be in favor of just awarding them a review for the fiscal year ending in June 30, 2011. And I'll make a motion accordingly.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion?
Yeah. You know, I'd be inclined to contact them and to see if there's... I mean, you don't... Just to see what, why the difference. It's just a lot of money. And maybe there's something that we can resolve. You know... I just hate paying the same price for a review as we got for an audit. Times are tough, you know. I mean, maybe it isn't for the accounting businesses, but I find it wondering why no one responded. You know, was our RFP too complex? Was it too convoluted? Was there some problems in the RFP that when they opened it up said, this isn't worth it, you know, they want this by... December, and you know, I can't read the RFP, but you know, I would just like to maybe talk to these guys and see what's happened. Mm-hmm. That would be my suggestion, and then vote on it. I don't know.
You know, I think if it was from anybody else, Kip, I'd wonder if they had that problem reading the RFP. But I mean, these guys have been doing our audit for what?
Longer, much longer.
Yeah, they might have been.
I mean, there's got to be a reason. I mean,
why can't you investigate that and see if you can get an adjustment on the price and then go ahead with our motion?
Well, why don't we authorize him to spend, you know, up to the $3,600 for the 2011? But if you can, you know, find out that their reasons and what they're concerned about and why the price is higher, and maybe. Address some of those concerns and get a lower price, then get the lower price. But so we might amend the motion to authorize him to enter into an agreement for up to the $3,600. So, I mean, I think we got a decision has to be made before our November meeting.
Yeah, right. And if, would it be prudent to have one of our directors do it, or? You know, from an approval perspective?
No, I mean, that's his, within his purview to do.
Okay.
Brian, what I'm concerned is the problem might be systemic, and if we don't resolve why this went up so much, we might have the same problem next year. I mean, if we're doing the same thing wrong time after time.
You're establishing a new baseline.
That's right. Yeah, that's just a big bump. And
yeah, well...
Well, would you be willing to discuss this with them and review it? And
law course.
And take the point on that, Kip?
I have nothing else to do. Yeah, between washing dishes and cooking.
I would take a guess that on an RFP for amount, 3,000 to 4,000 range, as we, if they're busy, got stuff going on, it's not worth their effort to even respond, is what you're getting from a lot of people. I mean, it takes time and effort on their part to fill stuff out, and then it's a gamble. Kind of money I see a lot of people not from knowing contractors and stuff too. If they are quite busy and they're still getting bids brought in, a lot of times, from my understanding, they throw a big price on there. It's going to be a lot of headache, but if they're going to work that hard and they have that much work, they're going to throw a big price on. And if they get it, then great, they're going to make good money. So, and kind of see the possibilities why it's like that.
So it sounds like we want to try and defer and have some additional discussions then.
Well, you've got Brian's motion there of just go ahead and approving it up to this with potential of knocking it down, which I think gives us an actionable thing we can do, and then, at least it provides a discussion back to the auditor that, we're not really comfortable, even if they say, our price is our price, and we say, okay, then please do it. Here's your $3,600, in December 31st. But at least it kind of, provides the feedback that, we're hearing, obviously, tonight that, it seems significantly higher, and when we're looking at, if we were looking at the full audit, $6,000 of, say, our, $180,000-$190,000 a year that we might bring in, that's a significant percentage of the district's money. So that's, hard pill to swallow. You're spending a lot of money just to prove that you're spending the money properly,
So, hey, Paul, was there any limitations on how long the pricing or the proposal was valid for?
Offhand, I don't recall that in their bid. No, I don't see the expiration date to their bid.
Well, like any RFP, this had a deadline for response, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That deadline has passed.
Correct.
So we'd have to really do another RFP. I mean, to get any other bidders, we'd have to reopen the RFP mm-hmm. process, do another one. I mean, really, our only option is to talk to Grimstad and why has the cost gone up so much?
Mm-hmm.
If they have some concerns that really aren't warranted, or there's something in the RFP here mm-hmm. we're not understanding, and so I don't know how else we can handle it this late in the year other than to say, if we've got to pay the $3,600 for the review, you're authorized to contract for that, but if you can get it for less, you're authorized to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And get her done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be in a situation where we don't have...
Right.
Right.
Kind of rock and hard spot, so I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I'll amend my second to follow with the new motion put forth.
You want to restate your motion? Get it for the record.
Okay. Well, I move that we... authorize our manager to contract with Grimstad and Associates to pay $3,600 for a review for fiscal 2011, with the understanding that he will, or with a direction that he will contact them and ask them what the reasons are for the increase, and to determine whether or not they can do this for something closer to what they would have done it for last year if they had done a review last year instead of an audit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And again, I second.
Okay. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries. New business. Devil's Lake plan next steps.
Okay, so the slideshow is coming up on the screen here. This is a slideshow presentation, basically summary of our Devil's Lake plan and the current top five objectives that the district has and the progress where we are to date. And then really what I'm looking for is some feedback as to what directions, which steps you want to take next. So the presentation will probably be about a half hour. We've got a number of slides and start clicking through them. First off, just to introduce the people at home to the board of directors, Kip, Randy, David, Brian, and Noel. You can all reach those gentlemen by emailing board@dlwid. There's myself and Seth, and then our support staff of payroll specialist, Park Lane Accounting, Accent on Business, Linda Burt, BX Sexton Construction, and our recent intern there, Lisa Lynch. So the outline of the plan itself is there. I won't summarize that for you, but we'll get right into it. The executive summary, which is the plan basis, improve water quality. That's what we're out to do. Maintain beneficial uses of the lake, recreation, tourism, public access. Deal with invasive species. Prevention strategies and control strategies, and using the Chinese grass carp being a preeminent in this plan. And then lastly, lake stewardship. The plan calls for a Center for Applied Freshwater Ecology, better known by the acronym as a CAFE, just basically a research science center and welcome center to the lake. So the mission of the Devil's Lake Water Improvement District, it's kind of stated here again, it's available on the website. Improve and maintain water quality, improve environment for fish and wildlife and humans, improve the recreational opportunities, establish safe and efficient navigation, public access, and this is a big one, improve the economy through the restoration of the lake. And then lastly, increase public awareness and public education. So for when we started developing our plan, what we wanted to look at is why we would develop a plan, and these were our seven objectives. Reduce the nutrient loading in the lake coming off the land. Reduce the nutrient cycling within the lake. Reduce cyanobacteria or blue-green algae dominance. Increase native vegetation. Prevent the spread of invasive species. Reduce toxicants. And we want to see how we're doing, so monitoring. So that's our seven reasons. If you go to the plan and you look at the plan, you can get a copy of it online, of course. But you can also see this nice history of Devil's Lake online. So go to the website and take a look at that, dlwid.org. Okay, also in the plan is a long chapter on the state of the lake. For people at home, it's an impaired body, 303D listed water body for pH and chlorophyll A, which are basically indications of cyanobacteria, blue-green algae dominance. It's currently devoid of aquatic plants, mostly. We've lost a lot of wetlands, and particularly a lot of riparian zones, which the riparian zone is basically the edge of the lake or a river system. So lost a lot of that to development. there are ongoing forestry and agricultural impacts. We've got fishery issues with the lake. We've got a threatened species in our lake, coho salmon, and non-native fish interactions and presence. And it's a heavily recreated lake. So the chapter now, which is what most of our interest is what are we going to do about it? And these tools for lake management, as we're calling them, are split up into three forms. We've got external controls, things that you do out on the landscape. You've got your in-lake treatments, things you do inside the lake or on the lake. And then just your education and outreach, which is always ongoing. So the first external control, and these are just listed as they are in the plan, but it is one that we've been working on already. We heard about it again tonight. Septic tank revitalization. So from the map, you can see we've got a lot of septic tanks in the watershed. There are 685 to the last count, many of which are undocumented. And the district's big goal in this is to get an inspection ordinance passed that would require at least an inspection on a 10-year rotation for all properties in the district that are on septic. Second item here listed on our external control, stormwater. Stormwater has become the number one pollutant of rivers, waterways across the United States. We can do a lot to change that. If you actually check out our listserv email that you would have got tonight, there's a big section on stormwater and things that people can do to limit the amount of stormwater. And so this might be something we want to focus our energies on more directly again now, too. External control here, just protecting, creating, and enhancing wetlands. Wetlands are big sinks for nutrients. They use up a lot of nutrients, protect the receiving water. Some of the steps listed that we've actually been working on in the past and potential opportunities for the future. So they're listed there and, of course, in detail in the written document. Save our shorelines. This is a big project that we've been working on. You see the image there of the rain garden at Regatta Grounds there, basically encouraging folks in the watershed to plant native vegetation and restore that shoreline, which is the key interface between the landscape and the lake. So there's a number of opportunities yet to be had, but we've got a pretty strong program already working in this regard. External control, this is on the education side, but there's an erosion prevention sediment control ordinance that the city has. The district worked to help pass that in 97. We've actually had a number of trainings over the last decade on this, held here in this very chamber. And there's just a lot of opportunity to keep this on the front page because you can do basically 1,000 years worth of erosion in an afternoon if you pull that excavator through your lot, and that's a pretty big impact to the shoreline. So preventing those impacts are key. Sanitary sewer. This is a schematic of the aerial of the proposed LID that Brian was talking about earlier tonight, which obviously we're great support of and appreciate his work in all of that, and potential to expand this program into other areas, along with actually just doing a sewer all the way around the lake in a different manner. So there's alternative systems, and then there are traditional systems that can be looked at. Phosphorus reduction. Simple goal here. Don't fertilize. You know, this is just kind of an education thing that we could potentially really focus on. Low impact development. This is again education in a lot of ways, but potentially a local planning ordinance that would just require people to develop in a way that doesn't increase runoff, that doesn't produce extra nutrients to run down the street and into our lake and impact the lake. So there are real good reasons to look at planning requirements because they're across the board, and
you know, we can look at that. But that's something that takes a lot of coordination, obviously, with the city and the county. Toxicant reduction and abatement. We could look at doing some hazmat training. Pesticide-free zones. We've got our lead-free weights that we've already began. Lincoln City is probably in the 99% pesticide-free zone currently. They did drop a little bit off of that for some of the roadway points, but all their parks are pesticide-free. So applaud them for that. But, you know, there's more that we can do, you know, from the homeowner standpoint, that sort of thing. Invasive species prevention. This comes down to education. We've talked a lot about boat wash stations in previous meetings, but really it takes a lot of shared knowledge. We do have the Devil's Lake Radio that broadcasts on AM 1610. If you're near Regatta Grounds or East Devil's Lake State Park, you can tune that in. There's some signage there to cue you into that. We were part of the OPB presentation called The Silent Invasion, which broadcast on public broadcasting a year ago, 2 years ago now. And there's a lot of signage that we contribute to around the lake. Native vegetation. This is looking at reestablishing native vegetation and the needs of it based on the grass carp control and how to encourage native vegetation. So we've done some work on this in the past, and it's something that we can bring forward to again. Invasive species management. So we've looked at some small scale things that we can do. We can look at larger scale ones again too, but simple things to prevent invasive species from coming back into the lake. Diver-assisted suction dredging, hand pulling, bottom barriers, basically just a physical containment. Potentially the water harvesters again, which aren't listed there, but those are dredging is even another one. Chinese grass carp. We are looking at this. This is on our top five, which we'll look at the end here. But current goals: achieve permit readiness. And doing so through an exemption through ODF&W. Currently, these fish are illegal in the state of Oregon, so the district would have to work to get an exemption effectively to that, for lack of a better term. And then the last of the tools for lake management are just the research, education, and outreach again. We talked about this at the beginning. Center for Applied Freshwater Ecology, better known as the CAFE, really just the idea of putting everything that the district does in one building for a lot of things and providing a science center, research center, education center about and for Devil's Lake. I like to say it's like a Hatfield Marine Science Center without the salt. And then monitoring. And there's a list of the current monitoring, some of the current monitoring that we do. E. coli monitoring, cyanobacteria, aka blue-green algae in the summertime, lake level throughout the year, pH, conductivity, DO, temperature, turbidity, and picture some of our previous interns that participated and helped us with that. Funding for all these ideas come mostly from our tax base, and that's the taxpayers that live inside the watershed. Folks say, you know, right along the shoreline or up Holmes Road, but you know, inside the watershed, east side of the lake, etc., and those that live outside the watershed but inside of Lincoln City. So if you are, you know, a homeowner that has a house in Nelscott, you're paying taxes to our district here, and you're assessed at the half rate effectively as those that are paying at the inside rate. Cumulatively, we can expect about $192,000 this year based on those two rates. And then there's other opportunities, too. We can use our money to leverage it, too, and that's something we've done in the past and can continue to do. So the current priorities are our top five. This came out of a planning work that we did, I think, over a year ago now. Aquatic vegetation management being the top one, septic tank revitalization, communications, working on communications, bacterial source tracking, and scoping strategies for sewering the lake. So those are our top five, and then I'm just going to break them up individually. And then before I go on, just mentioning some of the other projects that we've got going on. And you'll see through the rest of these slides either a checkbox, partially filled box, or an open box. And that's just kind of to give you an idea as to where we are on each one of these. So one of our previous recent projects was a shoreline planting guide. We've completed that. They're available. We've distributed 125, I would estimate, at this point of those. In fact, we're out of print again. We might want to look at printing up some more of those. We recently did a database of all the data for Devil's Lake that could be garnished from years, decades of studies that have occurred in our watershed back as early as like even 1959. That database was just recently completed. We've got ongoing monitoring. We've got our Save Our Shoreline program. We've got the erosion study that's going to be basically complete. You can almost put a check box there. November 3rd, you'll get that back. And then a small project at K Street, putting in a new water quality sampling site there in the Yeosu. So aquatic vegetation management, the key for aquatic vegetation management, grass carp. And here's our strategy here listed. The aim is to provide the assurance and ability to act against the recolonization of nuisance aquatic vegetation using a known and relatively cost-effective method of biological control, the herbivorous Chinese grass carp. Obstacles to completing that, in brief, placement of the grass carp in waters are limited, and the conditions that are in Devil's Lake, you know, we don't meet those. And so we must seek variances into these specific conditions to varying degrees. So some of the steps that we've completed within this grass carp strategic plan, we finished and adopted the Devil's Lake plan. That was a major part of our work in the last year. And so by doing so, we've really cataloged and set ourselves up for I think success in a number of different other items too. We've been meeting with ODFW. We've done research and records requests, ongoing literature review. And then the big one, which is where we're at right now, is we've got this consultant out, this RFP out for a consultant for this appeal process, to lead this appeal process. That appeal process will include the production of a scientific study. That checkbox is more empty than full, but the fact that we've started the RFP will give ourselves a little cred. But you know, this is what we need to have developed, a scientific study meeting these seven objectives: disease and parasite issues, interbreeding, hybridization, competition for habitat, food, and water, addressing impacts to habitat, native wildlife, predation by on native wildlife, and then costs of recapturing and eradicating grass carp potentially. And then this is the open-ended one, which is difficult to address because it's just other factors as deemed by the commission. So that's kind of an open-ended one, as you know. Other tasks that we've set ourselves for in this grass carp strategic plan is to do a biological assessment as part of this appeal process. And that's at the federal level, information that will need to be shared with the federal agencies of U.S. Fish and Wildlife and NOAA Fisheries. Other items that we need to do for this appeal is a topographic survey. So these are things that we could be working on as far as developing an RFP for, if that's so chosen to do. That would be an obvious one for me to that we'd want to work on. Aquatic plant survey, again, too. You got to know really how many fish you need out there based on the amount of aquatic life, et cetera. And then lastly, I think on this, for the grass carp economic impact study, we talked about doing that, dealing with the emergency responses to escape grass carp, and then the formal appeal to the commission. Then as a sidebar to the grass carp strategic plan, which is really the total, again, larger scale of the aquatic vegetation management, which is the overall goal, dealing with invasive species at the small scale, ahead of say needing a requirement to even plant grass carp, say with bottom barriers, etc. So that ends that top one, or top two. thank you for bearing with me. Septic tank revitalization. This has been SESPA's big project. We've heard about that tonight again. But to develop a means of assuring that septic systems in the Devil's Lake watershed are functioning. You know, I think that's a pretty good goal, and one that we're looking to meet through a inspection program. But we've got a database of all septic systems in the watershed. Done a lot of public outreach and communications. We've had informational gatherings on this. We've analyzed the database to look at how we might go about this, make it fair, and prioritize those parcels around the lake. We've worked on a draft ordinance, and now we just need to see, or we've worked at an outline for a draft ordinance. Now we just need to see an actual ordinance and go through the process of passing it. And so those are things that are key to that success. Communications. Increase and diversify communications within the community. So things that we've done recently, we've made up this brochure. We've handed out to every hotel in the city, all over. It's been dispersed. We've got our shoreline planting guide brochure that we also did, and another informational brochure that we actually mailed out last year. Really increased a lot of things here. Talked about the listserv earlier today, about the quarterly newsletter that you could get, email, water quality updates, special reports. All you got to do is go online, dlwid.org, and sign up for that. Big events. We had the Devil's Lake Revival just this last summer. Seth did a great job putting that together for us. It was held in August. A couple hundred plus people down there. We have our monthly meetings, and now we're having our monthly meetings here too. So this is another form of communication that that we can credit ourselves with. We're on Channel 4 live tonight, and we've had a number of open houses and projects that Seth has led with, like the lakescaping and the lakescaping for landscapers. And we've even done some giveaways, some skier down flags, printed out 50 of those. Give out lead-free weights, shoreline planting guides, seed packets that we developed that we've mailed out to folks. Really just trying to get our name out there, I guess, in a lot of ways, and be the resource for people that we are, and get people to call us and bring the good ideas. Other communication, local media is a big important factor there for us. We thank all of them. Sorry if we missed anybody there. We're on the radio monthly, KBCH radio, in the mornings, Tuesday after our meetings. Water quality updates printed in the NewsGuard each week. Thanks for that. And then just media releases that, we were on the cover of the Oregon Coast Today. You know, we've had two or three covers, so thanks to them for that. And the News Times and Boss Kite for all their coverage as well. Lastly, I think here, communications, part of our objective was to revise our sign a watch postings, aka our blue green algae things, which we did. We've increased the time on the lake communicating directly with constituents. I've conducted a photographic shoreline survey as part of our erosion study, but that was actually called for as part of this top five plan. And we even have a Facebook and Twitter account, so we're trying to reach all audiences. So you can like us on that or follow us on Twitter. Number four, bacterial source tracking. This is trying to take science into the watershed and determine where these organisms are coming from. We've heard about that earlier tonight, so I won't talk about where we're at with that, but just a slide representing that, basically. Some of the data that we got back from our first go of it in August, represented here, found that canines can be a big impact in the watershed. So we're looking at doing additional studies now, again, on Dee River and Thompson Creek. And then top five, number five, sewers. And this is to investigate how to go about this. But first off, we want to highlight the work that Brian Green has done again with the local improvement district coming forward here near Regatta Grounds. It would get, I think, 1 in 14 of all septic systems off of Devil's Lake. And we heard about the work there, and the kind of the check boxes that have been going on and that are yet to come in that respect. And then from that, and we've talked about what we might want to do, but we've kind of decided we want to hold off at this point unless there's new direction as far as you know, looking at other enclaves, you know, in the near term, but kind of let this pan out. But that, you know, that was the direction that we've had, and if you've got new ideas, let's you know, that's what we want to know tonight. And so that's where we are. You know, we've got those top five that we're still working on, but some of them are kind of completed. Certainly, I think the communications thing, we can say that we really checked that box. The DNA, I think, you know, we're at with that. The septic tank, we know where we're at with that. The sewer, we know where we're at. And the one that we have some things left to do is certainly on the aquatic vegetation one. But the timing may allow us to look at something else, I guess, in between. And really, the you know, the project manager is you know, there's an opportunity to create something new again, I think. And that's really kind of where this is coming from. So, you know, if we want to utilize you know, his time and energy on more of these top five things that we aren't at, we can do that as well. But it's also an opportunity to just start something new and get something else going. So that's really what I have for you, and want to hear your input.
So you want some direction on what you'd like Paul or Seth to do next?
Basically, yeah, and myself too. But you know, because we will always work as a team on this. But you know, that's kind of the way the project management specialist position was designed, is to just take on new things and bring them forward. And then, you know, the lake manager's kind of doing all the other background things that are existing already, and the other items that we're working on. So, you know, yeah, that's the kind of the direction that I'd like to hear. At least some discussion about, if not some specifics.
So, you know, I think that it's important to make sure that we focus on the top goals. You know, in terms of the septic tank revitalization program, I think we still need to spend a significant amount of our time there to make sure that either it's going somewhere or nowhere, you know, see where we're at, trying at least for the near term, see where we're going with the new council members, and work to help them understand over the next couple of months. You know, in terms of, you know, I think supporting the vegetation management portion of the goals is very important as we, you know, kick off the, you know, that work. I know, obviously, you got the shoreline restoration over at East Devils Lake Park. You know, and I would assume that, you know, over the next quarter, you know, those things would provide, you know, a decent amount of, you know, activity for you to do. And, you know, maybe even looking at, you know, what are the next things, you know, coming up with recommendations to us to, as to, you know, what could be, you know, quick hit things or, you know, long term things that we could be working on. I know that the city's working on the stormwater, or they had a stormwater, you know, group that was supposed to start meeting, or they were already meeting.
You know, they've got part of their stormwater GIS layer done. I don't know what else you're referring to, though.
I mean, from a stormwater perspective, I mean, are we looking at wanting to do something in terms of, you know, like a homeowner's guide, because most of our shoreline is privately held, to say, you know, here's things that you can do on your property to improve what's, you know, the runoff from your property. I mean, I could see us doing something like that, but I couldn't see, you know, trying to take on the stormwater road runoff from the city,
mm-hmm.
right? I just, you know, I think that's more their responsibility to take point on that, and maybe us to guide them in terms of, you know, best practices for managing a watershed. know, those are my ideas off the top from what I have. Anybody else got any idea?
Yeah, I'd like to know more about some of these other tools for inlay treatments for invasive species management. One of the slides talks about bottom barriers and diver-assisted suction dredging and hand pulling. I mean, what I don't know is, you know, if diver-assisted suction dredging, for instance, is something that would be even, you could have an impact on that with some kind of cost benefit that would be feasible or...
What do you think about, like, contingency planning, Brian? If we're unable to manage out there that we can fall back on?
I think it's a good step to know because we're going to be asked, you know, well, we want Chinese grass carp, but what about some of these other options? You know, and say, well, we've looked at that. And, for instance, you know, there are different varieties of bottom barriers, for instance, but either the cost or the maintenance or the effectiveness doesn't work for us. But I don't know if we have how much of that information we have right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, we had in 06, 07, you know, it's kind of when we first really looked at, you know, reformulating those strategies, and we did that assessment at kind of a gross level, you know, broad stroke level. And, you know, we can refine that if that's of interest, absolutely.
I think there's value.
Yeah, well, I think it feeds into, I mean, I think we're assuming, and, you know, I assume we're probably right, that these things are going to be too expensive to accomplish our goal of really effectively managing invasive species, but we don't really have the data to support those assumptions right now.
Yeah, and some of these may be useful in the near term, but yet wouldn't be able to necessarily manage them if they got out of hand. You know, and I think that, you know, at least for some of them, that would kind of be the goal, to maybe actually have the cost and ability to pull a trigger on, you know, bottom barriers at regatta grounds, because that's a spot where weeds would come in because there's a lot of boats coming in and out of there. Same thing at, say, East Devils Lake State Park. And or say the cost and really feasibility of responding, say, with diver suction, you know, to go in there. Is it even something? Yeah, we've got some kind of price ideas, but logistically, could we make it happen? You know, that's probably the level of detail that we haven't gone through. And then there's, say, you know, more physical containment stuff, like, say, a harvester. We've heard some interest of looking at, you know, costing that out again a little bit better. So those would be things that we could bring forward, and I think would also, I think, like you were saying, couple to the grass carp application peel process, because you're saying, you know, people are going to want to know, well, what about this? And if you've only got kind of that broad stroke information, that may not be enough to...
Well, in particular, people on the ODF and W Commission might want to know.
Yeah.
You know, there are other options. Have you looked at them, and what have you found out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have kind of a unique opportunity because, you know, it's a different animal than it was in 1986. You're looking at a field, and now you've got a desert mixed with short lawn down there. So, you know, a lot of the battle has been won, and we start here that much ahead of where we were back in 1986. And I just think you've got an opportunity to look at some other things, you know, that might work. You know, we were looking at a weed harvester that we could pick up for $50,000. That's the price of one of the studies. Maybe the study's not going to work. Maybe the weed eater won't work either. I don't know. You know, both are question marks. But it's a, you know, once you put the carp in there, there's no off button. And the harvester may not be able to do the job, but we would know. You know, it doesn't have giant fields to mow anymore. It has, you know, relatively barren landscape. just an opinion.
I remember us talking about in the goal-setting session here a year, a quarter ago, when we were talking about this exact thing and the situation that our lake presents is a kind of a negative toward these bottom barriers and hand poling stuff, because with our lake having an average depth of 8.5 feet, this exotic vegetation can grow pretty much almost in the entire lake, except for maybe 15% that's actually fairly deep. So, you know, we're not talking about a lot of the lakes that I looked at and researched. All the vegetation issues were up small arms in the shallower areas, and the main part of the lake always stayed clear because it was out of that photo, that light area. So I think that's one of the negatives we have when it comes to that, is we're basically fighting almost our entire lake bottom, whereas a lot of the other lakes, it may be a 10 or 20% issue for them. So the cost factor is not near as great. So that does definitely work against us on some of these things.
I mean, my point is that instead of us directors, you know, making those assumptions, that we need some data to say that, you know, that it won't, it's either not cost effective or it won't work because, and you know, here's the science that tells us that it won't work, or here's the data from the manufacturing bottom barrier. Mm-hmm. Whatever. It's just because, like you're saying, maybe because we got to coat the whole lake with it. You know, we need to be able to point the specific reasons why we are not pursuing alternative strategies for vegetation management.
Yeah, I think that's a question that we're going to hear, obviously. You know, we take that as a good use of time, you know, and that's really what we're discussing. Really, is what are the best uses of time right now?
I'd like to add something having to do with the cafe. I'd like to see further justification of why the cafe is part of the plan. I'd like to see some fleshing out of how it would be developed and how it would serve to enhance the Devil's Lake situation, and what costs would have to be borne to develop it the way that you would see correct. I just don't see enough yet. Sounds like a great idea, but I'd like to see more utility out of it, I guess. Be that discussed.
We did get some. Paul provided us with some figures. 25-year amortization for the purchase. I'm assuming a $420,000 loan. You're looking at about $2,500 a month. Versus what's our rent?
$1,200.
Okay, so the first thing I look at is how much extra it's going to cost, and then, you know, we got repairs and stuff. So, you know, that's just a basic starting point. How do we close that gap? I would like to be doing this so we're not paying. We have a better location, but we're not paying anymore. You know, I guess I want something for nothing, but... Try.
Well, let me ask something about that. Now, that was based upon $425,000, I think you said.
Yes.
How much do we have to make a down payment? Is that included in there, or what would be the? What are you expecting the? Based on that, what the cost of the property would be? I don't really understand how you arrived at $425,000.
You know, we just looked at. In our budget currently, we had budgeted the opportunity to borrow $400,000.
Okay.
And those numbers were arbitrary. I mean, we don't have, you know, they're not being put towards even necessarily a specific property, although I know that we've looked at some pretty intently, you know. But that number, is basically kind of what we thought we could budget for within our current tax base. And so, you know, we did, through the budget process, provide a debt servicing item that would cover that loan. You know, if we looked at, you know, $800,000, well, then we wouldn't be able to finance that. But that number was deemed financeable.
Yeah, I think the point that Noel's making is that just because there's a budget line item for that debt service does not justify the use of the debt service, right?
No, I'm not arguing that either. I don't even know. Just that number is what I thought
right.
you were trying to address.
Could be less. Could be worth more to us.
Yeah.
I think what you're getting at is you want a little better understanding and justification and overall cost structure so that we can have some long-term planning.
Well,
and that's what we can do. I mean, that can be, I mean, you know, the idea tonight is to get the direction, not to maybe necessarily have all the answers, you know, tonight, but to bring it back, you know, either on that or on bottom barriers or what, you know, what are the objectives that we're following? So if the direction is to do, you know, more of that, then that's perfect. We can do it.
Well, we've been talking about a loan up to $425,000, but that is supposing that once you buy it, you do nothing to enhance it. I've heard different things before I got on the board about possibly having quarters for visiting researchers. I don't really know what's in it anymore, but I suppose there's a kitchen or maybe it needs more restrooms. I'm imagining that you would make it you would have to spend money going in to make it a better facility.
You know,
So there would be more money then.
And I think you hit on it at the beginning. It was, you know, this is still like conceptual. It's an idea, and you would want to know more about it, and I, you know, would too. I would do respect all obviously that because we're not at the point of saying we're like making an offer.
We're at the very initial investigative stages of this, and this number was just. You said, understandably, that you're looking for some additional information. But so I'm just throwing out the little bit of information we had gotten was we picked this number out of thin air,
right?
Basically, and said just to get an idea of what a monthly payment would be for an amount that might be. Maybe somewhere in the ballpark of what we might end up paying.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of questions that follow.
The basis for my concern is that I just have this picture of 5 years down the road. We have this nice building, and we have this debt service, and we have a lake that is quickly becoming a weedy mess. You know, I don't want to see that ever happen. I'd rather keep our thoughts on. Keeping the lake in good shape, which I think it is right now, pretty good. Not going beyond that too far, unless there's great reason for it. It's going to really service and
fine. To that question, you know, the cafe has been part of the Dubsack plan. I mean, there was something that we thought we could have in that plan, and then it was really like a timing thing. You know, it was just like opportunity knocked, and so we wanted to. But it isn't still even the top five, so you don't see me spending really, frankly, very much time on it. Okay. And so that would be something that we could answer tonight. Like, do we want to spend, I mean, we've spent more time on it in the last couple months, maybe, than we did in the last eight, but that's not really a sizable amount yet either.
Pardon me, Mr. Skirvin. Can I? I think these are all really reasonable concerns, and if we want to talk in depth in the cafe, we could potentially make it a non-agenda item, but I think the point of this agenda item was simply to say that as far as my workload goes, a lot of the projects that I'm working on are really front-heavy, and at this point, I certainly have plenty to do, but I like to be busy, and I'm just saying that there is some available time that would be open if the board wants to do more in-depth research on something. So we're not just having an open discussion where we're kind of throwing around numbers. Or, you know, if Brian's saying, can we really get more of an assessment on alternatives to vegetation? And we certainly don't need an answer tonight, but I just want to make clear that there, you know, if there is some time available if you guys, if there's something that's really, the board really wants to give direction on a certain task. So again, I don't think we need to have the discussion tonight. You know, this week I thought it was going to be like not that busy of a week, and I'm definitely going to throw in over 50 hours. So it's, you know, things come up, but there is some time if in the future you guys want to make some direction and is available to you.
So I think what I would suggest is that, you know, for the short term, you know, backfilling any time that Seth might have in addition to supporting the vegetation management goal. And then what I might even suggest is that we, you know, as directors, make our lists, come back and have a, you know, a little bit of a prioritization session like we did 2 years ago, spring 2 years ago, and maybe reset some of the goals for, you know, what we might want to do going forward, whether the cafe falls off or not, you know, and have some of those discussions in depth in more of a planning workshop. And maybe do that sometime in January. So I think there's plenty right now to keep Seth and Paul engaged in vegetation management and looking at alternative strategies, as well as maybe, you know other, you know, opportunistic things that might come up, or septic tank revitalization or whatever.
Yeah, the goal is to, you know, and not only the goal, the actuality is that we're going to be doing our top five. And then there's potential, if there's a little bit of a vacuum space, to fill it with something. And that's what I want to know, is like, what would be that best type project type, you know, taking a look at that Devil's Lake plan, you know, and, you know, not trying to reinvent the wheel, but trying to look at what we did last year, as trying to identifying that, you know, what direction we want to go. So what I'm hearing tonight is interest in... potentially, as you said, stormwater manual, kind of some light level on stormwater, but I wasn't hearing a lot on that. I think the in-lake treatments, we heard more so about, like, what other, like the real costs associated, really, you know, like fine-tuning some of those costs. That probably be, you know, I mean, certainly in the next month, that's plenty to do. You know, I mean, that's, you know, these things are large, but they, and then... and then more information about the cafe. Those three, really, those two things is what I've heard most interest in. Is that right, or is there something we want to add to that list? Or
would it be beneficial for Seth to possibly update his septic database? It's been, what, 9 months since you put that together? 8?
Yeah, I think more than that, actually.
Okay. So what I'm thinking is... there's a lot of people that have probably, throughout the area, have had their tanks possibly replaced. More information, more tanks cleaned out. It's gonna make your database even stronger when you give it to the city. Work with the city with it.
Let me get a hold of the county and see how easy that is going to be to do.
Yeah, right. I don't want you to have to do it property by property, but if they had a query that,
right,
had,
and that's
here's all the here's
right,
the
like updates within 6 months or something like that.
When the septic service providers see if they could easily pull up what they've done over the last 12 months.
Well, then this, we don't have any information on typical maintenance surveys, inspections. We just know if an actual action has been taken, something that required a permit is permit. Basically what our database says on permitting. Okay. But yeah, I think that's really reasonable, and let me get and that's something I can do and find out just how hard it would be to do that.
What I was thinking about is we have a lot of ghost systems out there. Probably a lot of those systems, some of those systems have had maintenance on them, so then you would get the data points on them.
Right.
So I would think phone calls possibly. If there's stuff on a computer, they should be able to search it. I think it wouldn't be too difficult. But anyway, that would take care. That would help support our number two goal.
Well, if I'm wrong, please other board members speak up. But I think Paul and Seth, I think we would like your primary focus at this juncture to be we're going to be hiring this this consultant who's going to help us with advancing our grass carp initiative to support that by you thoroughly investigating to the extent you're able the cost and effectiveness of alternatives treatments to prevent invasive weed. That's
yeah, that's really good.
What we'd like you to do.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Perfect. Is there anything else you need on that topic?
No. Do we also want to address Noel's question too? I mean, do we want to spend, not this, the one question, but the whole question, the wider question? Or, because, I mean, that's within the plan, and that's like what I was alluding to before. It's just, that happened to be opportunistic, and it wouldn't have necessarily even beat out wetland protection. It was just one of those that wasn't on the top five that said, well, this is in the top 20, and here's our window.
I don't know. I'm not that feeling like we have to.
Yeah, it comes in way behind getting these carp. Yeah. So that's the most important thing. And this is an important question that our advocate, if we get one, will have to be able to discuss at length about what alternatives there are and whether or not they're viable. So I agree with him on that.
Okay.
But, we have had meetings with the city and others about acquiring the building that would become the cafe. And, what I walked away from those meetings with was the idea that we need to develop basically some partnerships with, or talk about the possibility anyway. And, I would like to see that investigated because it comes back to, can we make, compared to what we're paying in rent, can we make this affordable? That'd be pretty nice if we get a building on the lake that would be our office and our primary source of function for this district and this board and to be there. But it definitely, I think, has to take. I think the sense is it needs to take a back seat to the invasive species issue. But there is a window of opportunity, to possibly acquire this building at that we can afford, where there might be a real cost benefit. So if we can secondarily fit that in, I would be in favor of that. I'm not sure I speak for the rest of the board members.
I think if you're spending more than 10% of your time on it, it's probably too much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and that's just it. It hasn't even been 10%. And that's why, I can answer those questions that are the most obvious ones that we want to answer. Because, haven't invested the time. We've had just a few sparse meetings here and there, and it's mostly still just that light bulb idea. And, as far as the parameters, do you have quarters for, you were asking about, that's just like the widest, spectrum that we could imagine a couple years ago, where that would be now could be very much different. And in my mind, it is. So when we look at the cafe, I'm thinking, just an opportunity to bring people in and understand the lake. We do all this outreach, or we try to. And, if we put it all in a building and said, this is where, if you're interested in Devil's Lake, you need to go there. And that's the focus.
I don't think we're trying to justify it right now. I think we're trying
to
find out what the focus of, your next, work's going to be. And I think we came to that kind of a consensus, did we not?
Right. Cool.
You don't have to put it off the burner completely, but don't focus 100% of your time.
Right.
On it,
right?
It's in my vision, too, but I got to use binoculars.
Okay, anything else on this one?
I don't have anything else. Okay, shall we move on to the legislature review?
Yeah.
2011 session. Is that Paul or Seth?
Okay, so in your packet, I went through basically this document. I don't know, 93 pages. And this is a great document, and if any of you want to look at this, I would recommend it. It's the 2011 legislative session in review done by our Special Districts Association that we're members of. And they go through, and if you've ever seen anything to do with the legislature, there's just a thousand things going on there. We participated a little bit this last year on the septics thing, and it was, I mean, so much going on that it's just incredible to keep track of. And so this is just basically the summaries of the things that they found important to their constituents, which we're part of, fire districts to road districts to water improvement districts. So through that document, I went through and looked at, I don't know if I'm not counting them, but there's, you know, 10, 12 items there, house bills, et cetera, all the way through, of which can have a, you know, direct impact or indirect impact to the district, and they're all listed here for you. There's a local budget law rewrite, pretty major one. It's coming forward. Changes to the way districts are formed, tax levies are, new ones passed. Lots to do with noxious weeds. Aquatic invasive species permit fines were changed as part of a House bill. And these are just the ones that were passed. And there was a number of them that surfaced that didn't get through, which are also in a lot of ways detailed in here, which you would be of interest to look at as well. Mandatory checkpoints for watercraft. So these are things that, you know, are on the legislative agenda, and they go through their works, and some of them get passed, and some of them don't. And this one did. And so now, just as an example, the Marine Board, Fish and Wildlife, and the Department of Agriculture, or Oregon's DAA, are able to mandatorily have compliance to boat inspections. So if there's a boat inspection on I-5 and you trailer in a bunch of boats, be prepared to stop, you know.
Do we expect that they'll be doing these at the lake next summer or something? Or?
Well, I wouldn't expect it for Devil's Lake on that one. You know, it's a budgetary thing for them. Their focus is going to be on the big borders coming out of Nevada and California, Washington, Idaho. But you know, those are just things that are passed, and just want to make you aware of. Then there's some stuff with record retention, public records, etc. Budget items for DEQ that passed that we were actually looking at with the septic tanks. For your note, there, House Bill 5022, Senate Bill 600. We had Chris Castelli present that information to us on the riprap for fees that was take the, you know, they're not going to be charging fees associated with riprap and changes that happened there. And then the last one, Senate Bill 626, that's Quality Fresh Waters Program, which could be an impact that, you know, we would want to partner with. You know, if you look at this one, directs ODFNW to study programs to protect Oregon's unique angling opportunities.
Mean that they want to eliminate the ability to fish in certain areas or something?
It just says it, you know, and I'm just taking their summary and providing one sentence of it. So we're boiling it down pretty quickly here. But from my recollection, it was basically, it just instructs ODFNW to develop a program, to study a program, not even necessarily to develop it, so very much preliminary, on how do you protect Oregon's unique angling opportunities. Maybe that's catching coastal coho salmon. You know, that's where I'm kind of seeing the connection, you know, in that respect.
So would it be possible for our next meeting to, or at some point in between now and then, to kind of get a little more, get a refresher on the 5022, the coastal region?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, we can do that next meeting.
You know, as it relates to what we're trying to do.
That. So that's all I have. I just wanted to let you know of, you know, that this is a resource that's available to us and some of the highlights.
Appreciate it. Anybody got anything else?
Well, just, I mean, I just wonder if that, if HB 5022 might affect, you know, the outcome of a Lincoln City septic tank revival, you know, inspection work. What might have you looked at?
That's why I asked.
Yeah, definitely. We were lobbying on behalf of that for the past year. But yeah, I can give you guys a report on that at our next meeting.
Okay, good. David's claiming that's what he asked you to do.
But in relation, that's the tank.
Oh, okay. All right.
No problem. Okay. Anybody else on legislative review? Okay. Non-agenda items. Anybody have any non-agenda items?
I thought I wrote something.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to talk to the board for a second. I would like the board to consider directing staff to change the language of cyanobacteria that we use in public notices, such as radio, newspaper, and also throughout our district's website, to be in line with the Oregon Health Authority's HABS program. As you guys know, HAB stands for Harmful Algae Bloom Surveillance. the DLWID actually created their program out of this one. Oregon HABS program uses the name blue-green algae and not cyanobacteria throughout its website for the most part. I feel there's several reasons we should follow Oregon HABS lead using blue-green algae instead of cyanobacteria. I think most people outside this room do not know what cyanobacteria, that's the scientific name, actually means. If you say blue-green algae, most people know what algae, understand the color blue-green. most of the local people I've talked to do not know what cyano means, and the word bacteria usually derives a very negative response. Since bacteria is such a negative word to a lot of people, that they assume that means our lake is polluted and they will not go in it. We've heard of this happening more than once, actually multiple times for me in the past few years. And this is unfortunately not what we as a board were trying to accomplish. One of HAB's listed objectives is to, you know, I quote from their website, to educate and inform the public regarding the health risks due to harmful algae blooms. This just reminds me that it's much easier to educate the public if the public can fully understand the words we're using. Oregon HABS programs sends out advisories whenever a water body experiments, and you guys have lists now, you're getting those now and then for different lakes around the state. All of these advisories use the word blue-green algae, and not once in about 15 advisories that I look at did I see the word cyanobacteria in their press releases to the general public. I'm not trying to downplay cyanobacteria. I just think that if we speak in a more common language that people are understandable, that I really think this will improve the public's understanding of water quality. So I just, you guys might want to.
So then, if I understand, you're suggesting that we, you want to go ahead and potentially add an agenda item before our next sampling season, to revisit the program and revisit our communication strategies around how we do that?
Yeah. But I'm bringing this forward for you guys to take a look, especially look at the website, the Oregon Health Authority, which is the HABS, and do a little study there, see what you see. I just think we're trying to do as good a job as communication as we can. And when we use the common names, blue-green algae, which is what the state of Oregon uses, that we're going to have a lot better success with people understanding. So.
I agree with you because it position that puts instead of apples. Should I go to Devil's Lake? Devil's Lake issues sound. Similar idea.
Well, cyanobacteria has, there's two parts to that word, and each one sounds rather dangerous. And although it may be accurate as a term in describing what we're talking about, so is blue-green algae. That's much kinder, much prettier, much better term insofar as it doesn't scare people. And there's really no reason to scare people unless we have a toxic.
I think not only that, people can look at the water body and go, I understand what I know what blue-green algae looks like when I look at the water and I go, oh, okay, there's some algae, right? Cyanobacteria, I don't know to equate the two that I'm seeing.
Correct, yeah.
So I think I agree with what you're asking to do. And I think that maybe we can direct the manager to come up with a staffing estimate and a timeline to be able to accomplish that before our next sampling season, probably sometime in January or February, working time frame or whatever works into the schedule so that we can have that cleared up and ready to go.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other non-agenda items? Okay. Public comment on non-agenda items? Nothing? Okay. Any board comments or announcements?
Just an announcement. KBCH Radio next Tuesday, 7:30. Tune in. It's just our general announcement to recap tonight's meeting. But this Channel 4, this is great. So we're online. We'll be rebroadcast throughout the month, so people can tune in at a number of different times. I think even effective like 10 o'clock tomorrow morning is what I'm understanding potentially. So.
All right, thanks. Well, I adjourn our October meeting.